Welcome to the Skeptic's Guide to Emergency Medicine. Meet 'em, greet 'em, treat 'em, and street 'em. Today's date is November 16th, 2021, and I'm your skeptical host, Ken Milne. The title of today's podcast is How to Stop Geriatrics from Free Falling. Yes, I still can't sing. Doesn't mean I won't. And our guest skeptic is Dr. Kirsty Chalin. She is a consultant in emergency medicine and emergency medicine research lead at Lancaster Teaching Hospital Trust, Northwest England. She is the chair of the Royal College of Emergency Medicine Women in Emergency Medicine Group and involved with the RCEM Public Health and Informatics Group. Kirsty is also the creator of the wonderful, excellent knowledge translation project infographic called A Paper and a Pick, where she takes an entire paper and summarizes it into a visual abstract. Welcome back to the SGEM, Kirsty.
Hey, Ken. Thank you for such a build-up. It's great to be back.
Well, I'm building you up because you're coming to Canada. Woo, woo, woo. You are going to be visiting the Great White North. Tell us more.
I am. I'm hoping there's plenty of Great White because I'm actually getting to go skiing for the first time since COVID. And I'm skiing in Whistler and I've never skied North America before, so I really can't wait.
Well, so you'll probably appreciate that's really close to the, you know, Eastern Canada, you know, because the West Coast, East Coast, Canada, I'll probably just drive over for the afternoon and we'll hang out.
I'll hold you to that.
It goes right with the, you know, people always say, hey, I've got a friend in Canada. You probably know him. It's a big country, people. All right. Well, I am really looking forward to doing this podcast with you because it is on a super important topic. So, Kirsty, start us off with a case.
So you're mid-shift and you realize that the next patient you're about to see is the third in a row, aged over 70, who's fallen at home, and that this is her third attendance for a fall in the last 2 months. And you wonder if any emergency department-based interventions would help her and people like her to be safer.
Well, this is not the first time that we've looked at geriatric falls. In fact, we did an SGEM Extra podcast 6 years ago with my BFF, that's best friend forever, Dr. Chris Carpenter, one of the authors on today's hot off the press publication, guest hosted that back in 2015. Back then, we found out that at one academic center, older adults attending the emergency department with falls didn't receive guideline-based assessments? I mean, this is an academic center, Chris. They weren't risk stratified and they didn't follow the proper management.
And further back in 2014, the SGEM looked at a systematic review by a Dr. Carpenter. Is there a kind of a theme here? Which concluded that there wasn't a good tool to help us predict which ED patients are at risk of recurrent falls.
Well, close to, and I have to put my finger beside the side of my mouth. Yes, I realize it's an audio podcast. Close to 3 million adults age 65 and older visit American emergency departments annually after a fall. And falling is the most common cause of traumatic injuries resulting in older adults presenting to the ED. And 1 in 5, about 20% of falls result in injuries, and falls are the number one, yes, that's the leading cause of traumatic mortality in this age group.
And the Society for Academic Emergency Medicine, SAEM, their Geriatric Emergency Medicine Task Force recognized fall prevention as a priority over 10 years ago.
Well, this fits with that whole theme of knowledge translation, typically taking more than 10 years to reach the patient's bedside. But Kirsty, that's why we're here today. That's why we do what we do. Oh, I'm starting to slip into my Shatner again. All right. But we want to cut that KT window down, that knowledge translation window down from over 10 years to less than 1 year using the power of social media. So what clinical question are we going to ask today?
So in older patients presenting to ED with falls, do risk stratification or fall prevention interventions influence patient-centered or operational outcomes?
Ooh, you snuck in more than one question there because there were some ors in there. All right, what reference do we have?
We have Hamuda et al., Moving the Needle on Fall Prevention, a geriatric emergency care applied research network scoping review and consensus statement. And that's in Academic Emergency Medicine, November 2021.
And this actually presents two, not one, but two related, but different scoping reviews. So we have not one, but two PICOs. The first PICO is about falls prevention. So what was the population?
This was a systematic search that found 32 studies of fall prevention interventions for patients aged 60 or over who presented to the ED with a fall.
And they excluded that abstracts were just repeating data that had been already included in a full or not original research. What was the intervention?
Fall prevention interventions. And those included multifactorial risk reduction, medication reviews, exercise training, and models of care like hospital at home.
And what did they compare it to?
Standard of care, whatever that was.
And we do know that standard of care doesn't necessarily mean the best care. It just means that's what most people are doing. And we want patients to get the best care based on the best evidence. How about the outcomes? What were the outcomes that they were looking at?
So there were several outcomes. Quality of care ED metrics, ED operational outcomes like length of stay, patient-centered outcomes like ED returns, further falls, fear of falling, functional decline, and institutionalization.
You know, I love seeing poo in an outcome. All right, how about the secondary PICO? This was about risk stratification. What was the population in this part?
So this was another systematic search that found 17 studies of risk stratification and falls care plans in patients aged 60 or over in ED or pre-ED settings.
And the exclusions were the same as the first PICO statement. So what was the intervention?
Risk stratification and a falls care plan.
Oh, and I like this for the comparison. They didn't even compare it. Well, I guess this was still standard of care, but what was the comparison?
No risk stratification and falls care plan.
And sometimes that is the standard of care, unfortunately. So how about the outcomes?
There was ED referral if the study was from a pre-ED setting. Quality of care ED metrics, ED operational outcomes, and patient-centered outcomes again.
All right, thanks for going through those two PICOs. But this is an SJAB hot off the press, which means we have the lead author on the show. I love this part of the SJAB hop because we get to interact with a super smart person who cares passionately about this area of research. So we have Dr. Elizabeth Liz Goldberg, and she is an associate professor of emergency medicine and health services, policy, and practice at Brown University. Her specific areas of interest include improving care for older adults and public health interventions to enhance longevity and healthy aging. Welcome to the SJAM, Liz.
Thanks so much for having me.
Can you tell us, Liz, how did you get interested in researching falls in the older patient?
I actually trained in a state here in Rhode Island that has one of the highest percentages of population of the very old. So we have a lot of folks here over the age of 85. So you can imagine in my 4 years of training that I spent a lot of time on my trauma rotation and also during my residency training, caring for older adults. And it really got to me that there was a lot of variation in their care. I never really felt that we were doing enough to help this group of trauma patients have a safe transition home, and that we were doing much more other than addressing their traumatic injuries. So for instance, asking, you know, why did you fall and trying to address some of those risk factors was not commonly done. And that was frustrating to me, and I thought we could do better.
So Liz, you know, I want to give you an opportunity to give a shout out to your co-authors, because I understand Chris Carpenter wasn't on this paper.
Oh, he was on this paper.
Oh, darn it.
Dr. Carpenter is a staple in falls research, but we also had a lot of other members. We had 12 members of our Gears Falls group that all worked together for several months to put together this scoping review. And I want to give a special thanks to Dr. Hamuda, to Dr. Carpenter, to Dr. Hung, to Dr. Wong, and all of our GEER investigators.
All right. So Chris produced another paper. He's got another line on his CV about geriatric falls. All right. How about you give the author's conclusions?
Absolutely. So our conclusions were harmonizing definitions, research methods, and outcomes is needed for direct comparison of studies. The need to identify ED-appropriate fall risk assessment tools and the role of emergency medical services, EMS, personnel persists. Multifactorial interventions, especially involving exercise, are more efficacious in reducing recurrent falls, but more studies are needed to compare appropriate bundle combinations. GEAR prioritizes 5 research priorities. The first is EMS role in improving fall-related outcomes. The second, identifying optimal ED fall assessment tools. The third, clarifying patient prioritized fall interventions and outcomes. And the fourth, standardizing uniform fall ascertainment and measured outcomes. And finally, the fifth, exploring ideal intervention components.
You know, I can't tell you how much it warms my heart that you picked 5 things. Wow. It was almost like you were anticipating coming on the Skeptic's Guide. All right, we're going to put you aside for a second as we go through a quality checklist and the key results and then bring you back, Liz, to ask some nerdy questions. Now, Kirsty, we had a little bit of a challenge here for the quality checklist because our standard quality checklist didn't really seem to fit a scoping systematic review. So I did a little Googling and stuff like that. And of course, Prisma has this checklist and Prisma has an extension to their checklist for scoping systematic reviews. And we were excited to find that and do that for the first time on the SGEM. But then I think our enthusiasm waned a bit when we saw that there were 21 checklist questions. That's almost double my second favorite number, which is 11. So we're not going to
count that on my fingers and toes, Ken. I have to use the dogs to help.
So there were 21 checklist questions. Now, we're not going to go through all 21 questions. However, Liz and her team did get 19 out of 21, which is a pretty good score. So we are just going to mention the
3 that we responded to, which were no. We'll put the complete list in the show notes. So question number 4 was their protocol pre-published and the study registered?
No, it wasn't.
All right. Number 11 was, if done, provide a rationale for conducting a critical appraisal of included sources of evidence. Describe the methods used and how this information was used in any data synthesis, if appropriate.
So the team here didn't do critical appraisal of the papers and resources that they included.
And then the 15th question, if done, present data on critical appraisal of included sources of evidence. And that refers back to a previous item.
So as the team didn't do critical appraisal, they couldn't present the data on it.
Yeah. And we don't want to, you know, say this is bashing because we've only pointed out the 3 no's. There are 19 yeses. This was a high quality study. All right, let's get into the results. And the results for the first PICO, that's PICO question number 1. What did they find?
They found 32 studies that they included, including 3 meta-analyses and 23 randomized controlled trials, with a total number of 571,071 patients. Studies were from 11 countries, dating from 1999 to 2019, with follow-up from 1 to 18 months. Interventions included falls risk assessment, physical rehabilitation sessions, preventive education, educational guidelines, follow-up with nurse practitioners or physiotherapists, and alert devices. Most of them used recurrent falls as the outcome, although anxiety over falling, functional ability, and quality-adjusted life years also featured.
All right, how about the results for the PICO question number 2?
So this was 17 studies, including 4 meta-analyses and 8 randomized controlled trials, with a total of at least 17,232 patients. That at least is because one of the studies wasn't quite clear on how many were actually in it. Studies were from 9 countries, from 2011 to 2018, with follow-up from 6 to 12 months. 11 screening instruments were identified, with interventions including education, physical therapy, follow-up calls, discharge planning, and home visits. And most of the studies used recurrent falls as the outcome.
So those are the results from the PICO questions, but let's get to the key results. Can you put it into one sentence?
So the Gear Falls group identified five, back to our favorite number, research priorities.
Okay, let's unpack those five items.
Okay, number one, the role of EMS in improving fall-related outcomes.
And the second was, we need to identify optimal emergency department fall assessment tools.
Third, we need to clarify patient-prioritized fall interventions and outcomes.
And the fourth research priority was standardizing uniform falls ascertainment and measurement outcomes.
Fifth and finally, exploring ideal intervention components.
All right, that concludes the results section. It's time to bring Liz back as the expert, as the senior author on this paper, and ask her five nerdy questions to really help the audience understand this study, this scoping review better. You ready to go, Liz?
I'm ready.
You know, we love, Kirsty, you can back me up on this. We love talking nerdy.
I look forward to my nerd session every week. So, Liz, the group originally had three PICO questions, and the third one was about specific risk factors for falls, like things like polypharmacy. How and why did you decide to address the two that you did that are in this paper?
Great question. So we actually surveyed 33 investigators from all five GEAR cores. So these are physician scientists, nurse scientists, graduate students, other researchers that care about older adult research. And those 33 investigators prioritize the PICO questions via teleconference discussions and online voting. So PICO 1 and 2 were ultimately chosen as the highest priorities.
Well, the second nerdy question I wanted to ask you about was the consensus conference. You put together this group, this consensus conference of multidisciplinary people with the initial findings of the scoping review to generate and vote on research priorities. It must have been like herding cats. How do you manage an event like that, you know, and reduce the risk of one or two influential, not going to name any names, Chris Carpenter, or loud people dominating the discussion?
Yeah, I will say it was really well orchestrated. Dr. Wong and Dr. Carpenter organized the event, and they were, you know, PIs on this grant. So there was a lot of sending out papers prior to the actual meeting, ensuring that we all did our background research. And then all of us really took turns with speaking, and all of our groups decided within the group what the priorities were.
Well, congratulations. That must have been a really difficult task, because I've been involved in sort of meetings like this, a modified Delphi approach, consensus conferences, and it can be a real struggle to stay focused and make sure that one or two voices are not the dominant ones, and that it really is a collective group coming forward with the research priorities, or in this case, the consensus conference on, you know, the scoping review.
Yeah, agreed. And to follow on from that, I noticed that your second PICO question, your reviewers disagreed with each other quite a lot about what should be included. They got a Cohen's Kappa of only 0.12. Now, Ken and I are big fans of healthy, polite, skeptical disagreement. Can you tell us a bit more about that? What was it they were disagreeing on, and how did you handle it as a group?
Yes, I think it had entirely to do with my stubbornness, because I was one of these independent reviewers. But no, actually, we had two independent reviewers, including me, adjudicate the abstracts. And we disagreed on a couple of things. So we disagreed on whether to include systematic reviews. We disagreed on whether screening constituted a falls care plan, and whether secondary analyses should be included. And it turns out there were many studies related to screening. So we then met again and we reconciled our differences, and then any remaining disagreements were adjudicated by a third adjudicator, and that was the PI, Dr. Wong.
Contained within that answer, you know, one of the things that jumped out is about definitions, because when you're starting a conversation, it's really good to define terms. I found that in multiple scientific discussions, whether it's in person or on social media, just to know that both people within the conversation are using or understanding the term the same way. So you talked in your discussion about how many definitions vary across research groups. And I was surprised. I mean, what constitutes a fall is questioned at times. Can you expand on that? I mean, how do you define a fall?
Absolutely. So really one of the challenges with doing this research and one of our conclusions was there's variable definitions and we really need to come to a unified definition to do this in the same way every time. So we decided on a fall definition before we even started our scoping review. And we decided that slips or trips that result in landing on the floor or ground or lower level are falls. And we specifically excluded assault or any kind of external force that would bring you to the ground. And we chose this definition because it's simple and it's consistent with what the World Health Organization uses to define falls. It also resonates with me as a researcher because many of our patients, when I approach them and I say, we really want you enrolled in this fall prevention study, they say, oh, I didn't fall. I had a, you know, this was just a slip or this was just a trip. So making sure you define falls in a way that patients understand and researchers can get unified around is important.
Yeah, I'm less interested in the label or the word that's put on it and more interested in what they mean by it. So you could have called it a fall or you could have called it a conflabboodle. Oh, I had a conflabboodle today. Well, what does a conflabboodle mean? It means, you know, ground level or fall or trip or whatever that description. I'm more concerned about the description than the label that's used for the description. But fall is much easier to say than conflabboodle.
I'm so glad you brought it back to the patients, Liz. And I saw that your third priority was clarifying the patient prioritized interventions and outcomes. And I saw that you had both the review and the consensus recommendations reviewed and commented on by patient advocates before the final write-up. So what did those patient advocates change? And if you did it again, could you and would you get them involved even earlier?
Yes, to your second question, we would include patient advocates earlier. And actually, they have been included in Gear 2.0. So we've now gone forward and looked at a whole series of new questions, which are mostly not published yet, but will be soon. And that's because we learned that they make valuable contributions, not surprisingly. So the patient advocates for Gear 1.0 were only involved after the manuscript was written. And they were really involved to help us ensure we were publishing our results in a way that would be easy to understand for the patients this work most affects. I think patient advocates are a valuable asset to academic teams and can help us ensure that our questions really focus around what matters most, which is a central tenet in geriatric emergency medicine.
Well, it's also a central tenet of the definition of evidence-based medicine. See, I'm going to circle back because evidence-based medicine has three pillars, right? There's the literature, which you're creating and evaluating and interpreting, and it guides our care. It informs our care, but we also still need to use our good clinical judgment. We're clinicians. We see patients. But that third pillar, that's such an important pillar. That is, what do the patients value? What do they prefer? So I was really pleased to see that you got them involved. And I'm even more pleased to hear that you're shifting into second gear or gear 2.0 and going to include, yes, the podcast cannot conclude without a dad joke, going into second gear and you're going to include patients earlier to get their perspective. And I think that's fantastic. But I would like to give you an open opportunity here, Liz, at the end of this Talk Nerdy section to provide any other information that you think is really important for the SJAMers to know about your study or this topic in general.
Yeah, thank you so much for inviting me to speak a little bit more about that. So one of the challenges of this work, of doing fall prevention work, is fall ascertainment. So many falls trials have a mean age of patients in their 80s and cognitive impairment increases the risk of falls. So the accuracy of fall ascertainment with recall alone is quite poor. In fact, there was a large Medicare claim study that found that only a quarter of older adults actually tell their primary care doctor about their fall within a year of it occurring. So this is really an area that would benefit from wearables with sensors. And some of my current work is using the Apple Watch to track fall occurrences so that we have objective measures of falls that we can get in real time.
That is so cool. Yeah, because we're probably suffering from denominator neglect. We don't know how many people right now, while we're talking, are falling at home and would never have contact with the healthcare system. And having some kind of wearable with an accelerometer of some kind could be really helpful in understanding, okay, what is the denominator in that group to better focus our research attention? So that's awesome. Way to go, Liz.
Thanks.
Well, thanks for putting up with our nerdy questions and the dad joke. Kirsty, hey, time to comment on the author's conclusions and compare them to the SJAM's conclusions.
So it's clear that the literature on falls in the older adult is difficult to synthesize due to differing definitions. And there's plenty of room out there for good quality research on the identification of and interventions for older patients who fall.
All right, Kirsty, time to give an SJAM bottom line.
Patients may or may not benefit from falls screening and interventions. There's inadequate evidence to support a specific tool or intervention across the board, but it's likely that multifactorial interventions are the most effective.
And can you resolve the case that you presented at the start where you'd had three different individuals already had fallen and the one individual you were talking about had already fallen, I think, three times?
Mm-hmm. So I can refer my patient to the Frailty Outreach Service, where she's going to undergo a comprehensive geriatric assessment by several different professionals in a multidisciplinary team.
All right, how are you going to take this new scoping review that's been published and apply it clinically?
So I don't think I can apply this directly clinically, but many centres have some kind of full screening or prevention program, and I'm going to go back and encourage mine to get involved in the Gear Falls priority research areas, or the local equivalent in the UK for me.
And what are you going to tell this individual that had fallen that you're taking care of?
I'm going to say to her that previous falls are a predictor of future falls, and we don't know the best way to support you to reduce the risk of this, but we think the most useful approach is looking at all the different factors that might contribute to it. So we have a team that can do that.
Well, here we are, another week without a Keener contest winner. Listen, people, the prize does exist, and it is real, so don't be so skeptical. But the answer we were looking for where did the term Code Blue originate?
Code Blue.
Was Bethany Medical Center in Kansas City. All right, Kirsty, what's the Keener contest question this week? And let's see if we can get a winner.
This week, what other recommendations has the Geriatric Emergency Care Applied Research GEAR Network published?
Oh, so if you know what other recommendations this GEAR group has published, then send an email to thesgem@gmail.com with Keener in the subject line. The first correct answer will receive a cool skeptical prize. But now it's your turn, SJMers. What do you think of this episode on falls risk stratification and prevention in older adults? Tweet your comments using #SJMHOP. What questions do you have for Liz and her team? Ask them on the SJM blog. The best social media feedback will be published in AEM.
Also, don't forget, those of you who are subscribers to Academic Emergency Medicine can head on over to the AEM homepage to get CME credit for this podcast and article. And the process will be up on the SJM blog.
Well, thanks, Liz, for coming on the SJM and talking about your hot off the press publication.
Thank you so much for having me. This was great.
And Kirsty, I'm always looking forward to doing more of these episodes, but I'm actually secretly, don't tell anybody, figuring out how I possibly could fly out to Vancouver and surprise you in January when you're on your ski trip, because it would be worth the trip to hang out together.
That would be fantastic, Ken. I can't think of a better place for talking nerdy than on a ski lift on a beautiful mountain.
Oh, we should do that. I just have to get prior approval from someone else that you know. All right. So to finish off this show, Liz, can you give the SJM tagline?
Remember to be skeptical of anything you learn, even if you heard it on the Skeptic's Guide to Emergency Medicine.
Talk to everyone next time.